Okay, our next presenter is Ms. Senda Josette. She has been actively involved in survey design, data analysis, report reproduction, and presentation. She also is engaged in quality control of data entry and long-term data storage. Ms. Josette's previous projects include the Status of Recruitment Resources and Strategies Program, Youth Substance Abuse Prevention Program, and the Community Health Aid Practitioner Retention Study. Ms. Josette will address the Frontier Extended Study Clinic Demonstration Project, opportunities for and barriers to creating a new provider type. Welcome, Ms. Josette.
Hello. The Frontier Extended Stay Clinic Demonstration Project has been going on for about 5 years, and I've been involved with the project since the beginning. The Frontier Extended Stay Clinics, I have no disclosures to make. The Frontier Extended Stay Clinics are designed to address the needs of serious or critically ill or injured patients, as well as provide for the ongoing health care needs of the communities that they are located in. Provisions of extended stay services require additional staffing, equipment, and facility capacity. However, at this moment, extended stay services, as well as emergency services, are not reimbursed by Medicare, Medicaid, or third-party payers in these facilities. What makes a FESC eligible to become a FESC is they have to be 75 miles away from the nearest acute care hospital or critical access hospital, or without access to a public road, such as an island. They provide primary, urgent, and extended stay services. They have to provide all three. And it's to meet the needs of, like I said, seriously or critically ill or injured patients who, due to environmental conditions, cannot be immediately transferred, or patients who need monitoring and observation for a limited period of time. And a FESC encounter, or extended stay encounter, are those that last between 4 and 48 hours. FESCs are not allowed to keep patients beyond 48 hours unless there is significant external qualifications, such as very bad weather or inability to get transportation there. The timeline. The Frontier Extended Stay Clinics were developed as a result of two congressional acts, the first one being the Medicare Modernization Act authorization in 2003, which gave authority to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Department of Health and Human Services to conduct a demonstration project to reimburse extended stay services received by Medicare beneficiaries. In 2004, ORHP provided funds to the clinics in order to evaluate the feasibility of FESC as a new provider type and to provide information to CMS on the types of visits that they would be reimbursing for. The cooperative agreement to the Alaska FESC Consortium via the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Corporation is how ORHP has distributed the funds. There were several measures that these clinics had to meet to be included in the FESC demonstration. Life safety improvements, equipment, additional staff, and quality assurance programs were all part of that. The list is 24 pages long of requirements that these clinics had to meet in order to be eligible for the ORHP funds. In 2004 and 2005, the Alaska facilities met ORHP's requirements and Medicaid licensure. In 2007, the CMS demonstration award was announced. And in 2010, it began, and the ORHP, the CMS demonstration had some requirements. It had to be budget neutral, and it had to run 3 years. It started in 2010, and it will be running until 2013. The five clinic sites were announced in 2007. That will be on the next slide, and I'll show it to you. And the first clinic met the conditions of participation in April 2010. Okay, the participating sites. The Alicia Roberts Medical Center in Kluwak, Alaska, is located on Prince of Wales Island in southeast Alaska. It is a tribally operated community health center and federally qualified health center. The island's population is about 4,000. It is quite a large island. It is the fourth largest island in the United States. And it does not have any public road access to a hospital or to a critical access hospital or an acute care hospital. Crossroad Medical Center in Glen Allen, Alaska, is a community health center and also a federally qualified health center. The town's population is only 500, but they are the service hub of the Copper River Valley, and they serve a population of about 4,000 in an area the size of West Virginia. They are connected by road, but they are 250 miles away from the nearest hospital. Haines Medical Center in Haines, Alaska, is also tribally operated, community health center and federally qualified health center, and it has a population of 1,800. It is connected to a road system, but you have to go through Canada to get back to the United States, and it is more than 75 miles away from the nearest hospital. Illooluk Family and Health Services in Unalaska is a community health center and federally qualified health center. It has a population of 4,000 year-round, but the seasonal bering fishing fleet will increase that by sometimes 100%. There is a serious nursing shortage in Unalaska. They have not been able to keep a nurse out there for about 10 years. it is also very far away. They refer all of their medevacs to Anchorage, which is 900 air miles, and it's not a fun flight if you've ever been out there. the weather makes it very difficult to get in and out. You can be stranded out there for weeks at a time because of weather. Inter-Island Medical Center is the only location that is not in Alaska, and it is in Friday Harbor, Washington, in the San Juan Islands, off of Seattle, and it is not connected by public road. They do have a reliable ferry service, but weather can make it difficult to get in and out by boat. The data collection period for Alicia Roberts, Crossroad, Illooluk, and Inter-Island was September 15th, 2005 to September 14th, 2010. We have 5 years of data for those sites. Haines Medical Center came in a year later when they met their conditions of participation, and they started in 06 and they have been to 2010, and they have been for 4 years. This is just a map to show where the locations are and the hospitals that they typically refer to. As you can see, they are quite a ways away. the different types that they see, the transfers are those, this is 2,125 in 5 years. These are encounters that lasted between 4 and 48 hours. lasted between 4 and 48 hours. There are ones that got that were under that, but because CMS only wanted to look at the extended stay encounters, FESC encounters were limited to 4 to 48 hours. Monitoring and observation were 60%. Those are people who came in, they were monitored, observed for a period of time, and they were either discharged home when they got better, or they were transferred out when they did not improve. And transfers made up 39%, and other was 1%. Those typically were people who left against medical advice or recovered before they could be transferred. Mean encounter length for all FESC encounters was 9.3 hours. Monitoring and observation encounters were typically a bit longer. Transfers were 8.9, and other was 8.5. Chief complaints, and this, we did compare this with some critical access hospitals, and they're typically the same. there were really no differences to show. But respiratory distress, abdominal pain, chest pain, injury, and flu-like symptoms were the main complaints for FESC encounters. The discharge diagnosis, 13.9% were for a cardiovascular reason, 13.1% gastrointestinal, 11.6% for injury, substance abuse was up there, and pneumonia and bronchitis. In year 4 and 5, we started asking the clinics how having a monitoring and observation option affected the care that they gave to their patients. And the overall percentage said that it avoided an emergency transfer. There was some that delayed, avoided the risk of sending a patient home, or allowed the patient to seek non-emergent transportation. This is one of the major benefits to CMS and insurance companies, is the avoided medevac cost savings. This is for year 4 for the Alaska sites. I was not able to get the Washington information. For Glen Allen, 25 avoided medevacs came to $1.2 million. I called each medevac site, asked them how much it was for their medevacs between these locations, and they gave me their number. They also said that this does not include any ancillary costs. No equipment on the planes, no ambulance once you get to the location, none of that. So when it comes down to it, and also in Alaska, $5 million, the clinic director looked at that and she said, that's low. And I said, well, I only got, you know, the information through the medevac company, and she said, oh, it's double that. Because gas prices have gone up, and they also have to pay to have a pilot on call, and that is not included. So around $11 million in 1 year, these sites saved the medical system as a whole. The benefits to the FESC model is that it's more convenient. It allows patients to stay in their hometown and provides a separate treatment room. And that's twofold because these clinics, because they are community health centers, they are required to provide primary care services by the federal government. They cannot allow that to slip. And without a separate treatment room, if an emergency room would come in, and this did happen previously, to the infusion of funds, which allowed them to get a separate treatment area, they would have to be in just one of the primary care rooms. And so patients would get pushed back further and further and further. And primary care in many of these places was slipping because they had to take care of the emergent cases that walked in the door. There's nobody else around to take care of these people. So the patients liked it because they got to stay and they got their primary care visits in as well. It's more efficient because it reduces the cost of transportation to a hospital. And it's safer. It provides the proper equipment and staffing to stabilize patients. And the staffing was a critical issue since these doctors were working all day and then they were on call, sometimes all night. And so they felt that it was unsafe to continue practicing for 48 hours with no sleep. And the on-call staff reduced the provider burnout and stress. And we have seen that in some of the locations, being able to have on-call staff has greatly reduced the stress levels of the providers that are out there and allowed them to provide better care. The challenges. There was a significant cost to meet the CMS conditions of participation, life safety, equipment, and staffing. And in some of the areas, staffing has been the biggest barrier. If you are aware of some of the challenges of rural healthcare, staffing is always an issue in rural healthcare. It's very difficult to get doctors, to get nurses and PAs, and in the case of Alaska, it's very difficult to get nurses. The FESC payment does not cover costs. It's a low rate, and it bundles all the ancillary services. And so the clinics themselves are not really happy with the Medicare payment. However, it's a start. It's a start. It's legitimizing the model. The small Medicare patient population also limits the impact. Many of these communities have very, very few Medicare recipients. Especially in Alaska, they say they have a median age of 35 because everyone is 35. It's a lot of fishermen and very young families that are out there. Reimbursement is inadequate and tricky. It's difficult to figure out. It's difficult to figure out what exactly is covered. The language is sometimes contradictory, and the clinics are having a very difficult time figuring out exactly what will be reimbursed and what will not. Extending FEST to commercial payers is a challenge because they have been getting these services for free, basically, and they don't want to pay. And clinics, another challenge is that the clinics will continue to provide these services. As one of the clinic directors said, there never was a before FESC. The infusions of funds from ORHP helped bolster their infrastructure, but it did not change the way they were providing services. They've always been providing these emergency and extended stay services, just not as well. So they will continue to provide these services whether they are reimbursed or not. So that is a challenge. The distance and sparse population in the remote and frontier areas makes access difficult, and since these places can't afford to have a hospital, the FESC option seems to be something that's very good. Once some of the challenges can be worked through, we are confident that this will be a model that could be set up in many frontier areas across the country. South Dakota has expressed an interest in setting up a FESC in some of the areas where their critical access hospitals are really struggling, or in areas that need something but can't afford a critical access hospital. So, this is my contact information at the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska Anchorage. If you go to our website, we have links to our reports on this project. Also, if you want more information on FESC itself, including the 24 pages of CMS requirements, not that you'd want that, but it is on www.alaskafesc.org.